Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is Knowledge of Power Radio, and I'm happy to announce our return. Oh, this is wonderful. Change can be a great thing, and in this case, it is just that great. We're ready to structure a trip to West Africa for those of you who are interested in going. We're ready to put the pedal to the metal and truly rise the mentals of the people on tonight. And from now on, it's just so good to be back with you. And this is, of course, your girl, Yvonne the Peachy Apple. So good to be back on the radio. And to all of our listeners, I want to apologize to you for our sudden departure, but we're back now and we're stronger and better than ever. And I'm so glad that you're joining us on tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, sometimes you have some faithful listeners that no matter what, they're here on point, and I want to appreciate you all for doing that. Again, this is Knowledge of Power Radio, and this, of course, is your girl, Yvonne, the Peachy Apple. And as I said, we're bigger and better, and we have some wonderful things we are going to deal with and going to continue to deal with. You know, we have wonderful guests on tonight's show. We have Mustafa Sharif from Senegal, and he's going to continue to talk about putting together a trip for those of you who want to go to Africa. He has an awesome idea, and for you brothers and sisters that are interested, you know, all you have to do is worry about getting your passport and you know, getting a plane ticket over there. He has some connections where the tickets would be cheap. He has his own gold mine, and he has all of the equipment that's needed to dig. He just don't have workers. And for those of you who are interested, you'll have an opportunity to go to Africa and to dig in the mines. And what you pull out the mines, you put a percentage back to the villagers for the chief, and you put a percentage back into a welfare organization, and the rest of it is in your pocket. It belongs to you. He'll go into more of that later on and pretty much describe to you exactly how that system is going to work. But you'll go and enjoy yourself over there for a couple of months and come back with a whole bunch of gold in your pocket. And that's a whole bunch of money in your pocket. So we're talking about financial structure as well. Then, of course, we have Shamoya. And, you know, he was on the show, the last show that we did with Knowledge of Power, and he was fantastic, and he was dealing with us bridging the gap. So there's so much to talk about on tonight, and we're not going to hold you up too much, you know, but I'm just glad to be back on the radio. I'm glad to have all of our guests on the radio tonight and all of our faithful listeners on tonight. It's just wonderful to be back. And, you know, like I said, we're bigger and better than ever. So those of you who are ready, let's be ready. So, Shamoya, are you there? I guess he would be there if I turned his mic on. That's terrible. That's horrible. That's
yeah,
right.
I'm
last
here.
Me.
I'm right here. Good
oh,
to
wow.
Be back.
See, too long. I've been going too long.
No, that's okay.
How are you
it's
doing
okay.
tonight?
I'm doing
Thank
beautiful.
You.
I'm
too
ready
kind.
To go. How are you?
I know you are. I'm doing well. I know you had some stuff burned up inside you for the past couple of weeks. I know that you're really ready to get on fire and go and you know, to deliver what you have to the people who are listening. And I really appreciate your patience. You know, I appreciate your kindness. I really do. Thank you so much, you know, for believing. Thank you so much for believing in Knowledge of Power. And thank you so much for believing in me. And thank you for holding on in there and not turning around and saying, you know, later. I really appreciate you. I really do. And your voice is strong and it needs to be heard. And I appreciate you for wanting to be heard on Knowledge of Power. Thank you.
I appreciate that as well. I appreciate the extension of the love.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So last time you was on the show, you had some powerful words, you know, and I know that some people might not remember everything that you said, but if you don't mind, you know, perhaps you can sort of like touch up on some of what you said before, and then you could just go ahead on and add it in when you want to. But I know we were talking about, you know, bridging the gap, because we're concerned about the mental state of our people. And when we say our people, you know, we're not limiting that to the Hebrew Israelites, but our people. You know, who don't
right.
know that they're Israelites, and our people who are, and you know, and you know, one of the things that's important to me about bridging the gap is that we understand, overstand, completely stand on the fact that it doesn't matter how you was taught to believe to a certain extent. And what I mean by that is that we can't allow those beliefs to cause us to be unnecessary enemies of people. It's
Absolutely.
Difficult to be able to tell somebody where you're coming from or to teach
right.
them your way if you can't have a conversation with them.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? I mean, and I found this sort of kind of crazy. Right, if we're arguing and screaming and yelling at people and, oh, you're doing it the wrong way, how are they ever going to hear what you have to say?
Right.
You know, so my point is that, you know, with bridging the gap is that we overstand the fact that the Muslims are our brothers too. We overstand the fact that there's a whole lot of lost Christians out there that don't know that they're our brothers and sisters, but they are. But the most important thing is that we put them in a place of being able to hear and being willing to listen. And we can't do that if we're being combative. We can't do that if we're being forceful and if we're being argumentative and if we can't get along with each other. What in the world makes you think that somebody want to join this circle? Do you agree?
Right. I agree 100%. It made me think about something that the Messiah said. He said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And originally, in the last program, we were going over how people are mentally being held captive. And that comes in many different forms. We also touched up on how we find more things to disagree or be conflictual over versus us finding something to uplift or compliment somebody on. And
right.
That's kind of what I wanted to touch up on today in respect to what you just spoke about. And based on the statement, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And when you look at any society today, and you look at any society back in ancient times, the mainstay of that community was family. If that family was divided, if those people became divided, it only increased separation, conflict, war. These are the things that the Most High speaks about in opposition to him. And if you look, going back to any book, whether it be the Bhagavad Gita, whether it be the Quran, whether it be the Bible, the Torah, if you go back and read many of these books, the centerpiece to humanity was family, the mother, the father, the children, the other extended family members. This was the mainstay of any community that was to thrive. And
right.
This is something that we're losing as far as people, as far as those who are supposed to be humane. We find camaraderie in our respective religion or our respective street gang or our respective community of politics or politicians. And these things divide us. The same way we find camaraderie with one person, we find division with another. These titles,
right.
All these things, these labels that we put on ourselves. And I would like to touch upon that, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Okay. In a relationship, if you look at how the Father formed everything, you go all the way back to the ancient Sumerian, the ancient Egyptian people. If you look at all these different families, there was a male and a female. And when you look at the language inside the book, the creator said that it was not good for a man to be alone. Now, consider the word good meaning righteous. He was showing that that was not a good thing, a lawful thing for a man to be, was by himself. The work cannot be done by himself. And you do have many people that tend to believe, I don't need help. I don't need anybody. I can do it myself. And this is the thing that continues to cause that division. And when you look at how family operates, before you get any governmental system, before you get any kind of community, you have to have a family that begins with a man and a woman building up a family with children, with rules,
correct.
With conduct, mm-hmm. structure. That's what creates a strong infrastructure. It starts from family. This is where we need to begin as far as bridging the gap. Like you said, our people.
Uh-huh.
Our people are many. And I think one of the things that we have an issue with.
I think the call was dropped, but we're going to continue as soon as Shamoya is able to call back in. But one of the things that we do have an issue with is the fact of a lack of understanding, a lack of self-love. You know, I can't complete what he was going to say, but I can sort of kind of fill in a little bit on my own, just the fact that we know that that we have, hold on, he's back. I'm so glad he is. Hold on. Are you there?
My phone just cut off, sadly.
I know. I was trying to fill it in, but I'm so glad that you called right back. Go ahead.
No.
You said that one of the things that we have the problem with.
One of the things we have problems with as far as the family structure is that nowadays men and women don't know what to use each other for.
Right.
Think about that for a minute. There's thing you hear people say, I don't like to be used, but I think there's a deep meaning behind that. It's okay if somebody uses you for the benefit of yourself and them. It's when you're being misused, it's when problems start to arise.
You know, if I could cut in here.
Please
that,
do.
That was very interesting and powerful what you just said. You know, because we're supposed to, when, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, and a light bulb went off in my head, we're supposed to use each other for the positives in a relationship. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Mm.
Believe it or
so
not,
it's there. Right.
There's a formula.
Right.
There's a formula. And you were going right into that. If you take somebody, for example, give you a simple version. If you take somebody that has OCDs as far as micromanaging every little thing, if
mm-hmm.
you put that person in a place where it's not used properly, it will come off as though an OCD, and it will aggravate people.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put that individual in a place where he has to take care of the most critical and smallest thing, that
mm-hmm.
person is going to be perfect for the job.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So the same thing goes with family. There are seven things
right.
that a man should use a woman for and seven things a woman should use a man for. If we learn to understand our place and women learn to understand theirs and what their use is for, the system will flow a lot smoother. The conflict comes in when we try to use a person where it doesn't work or doesn't fit. And
right.
you're trying to force that person to do something or be something they're not. That is the actual definition of what stress is.
Mm.
It's doing something that you don't want to do, but being forced to do it, or being somewhere you don't want to be, but yet you have to be there. It
right.
causes stress.
Right.
The things that a man use a woman for is understanding. He should use her for tenderness. He should use her for her patience. He's supposed to use her for her centeredness. He uses her for her harmony. He uses her for pleasure and enjoyment. And most of all, he uses her for her faith. When a man is not using a woman for these seven things, he's using the woman inappropriately.
Wow. That was deep. Do you mind repeating that for all of our listeners again so they can hear that again? The seven things
okay.
that a man should use a woman for. Number one.
Seven things a man should use a woman for. Number one is understanding.
Uh-huh.
The second one is tenderness. Because a man may not have those softer feelings, that type of compassion that a woman would have. So in that regard, she becomes his additional set of eyes. He's supposed to use her for her patience. He's supposed to use her for her centeredness. A man is supposed to use a woman for her harmony and her ability to harmonize. He's supposed to use her for the pleasure and the enjoyment. And I don't mean just sexually. There's more dealing with pleasure and enjoyment, because pleasure goes right back to being joyful, delight.
Okay.
But finally, he should be using her for her ability to have faith. These are the things
wow.
that a man should be looking at and using a woman for.
Beautiful. That is correct.
Now, there's also a protocol for the woman and how she's supposed to use her man. Number one, she should be using her man for stability. And keep in mind, stability means his firmness, his durability, his ability to be steadfast. That's that consistency that women desire in a husband.
Right.
She should use him for comfort. And this is dealing with assisting and aiding and giving strength where it's needed. Comfort deals with relieving a woman of her mental anguishes when she's going through something. That distress. When she feels a little overwhelmed, that's where the husband comes in and he opens that valve. Let that out. A woman should be using her man for guidance. Because she believes that according to the teachings, he's the head that is going to lead them by the way of the rules, not by his misguided feelings. She should use him for uplifting. And that's when a woman may need her her mental or her emotional state to be elevated, to be improved. She should use him for fulfillment. That's the completion, that establishment that is needed to give a person that purpose in life. Because any time a woman takes a man as her husband, she's going to engineer everything that she needs to design her nest right around that structure. That is something that is in her. She should use him for pleasure and enjoyment. And finally, she should use him for truth. And truth deals with that sincerity, that genuineness that a woman needs. Because if you notice, when a woman hears a man speak to her a certain kind of way, first thing she'll start to wonder, have you told this to other women? Or are you sincere? Or is this just a game? So that sincerity is very important. If she's using her husband for these things and he's using her for the thing that I just mentioned a few minutes ago, the relationship goes together because to relate means to connect. It has to be that connection. Would you agree?
You know, absolutely. What you just said was really powerful. I mean, very powerful. And it's amazing because a lot of times when unfortunately, when it comes down to those kind of situations, the usury is usually very negative. But when you use that word now and say this is what a relationship is supposed to be and this is how we should use each other, it makes a lot of sense because these are the things that we're supposed to be fitting in to meet with one another and to make a relationship work. And I really enjoy what you just now said, and I appreciate you for bringing that out. That was really strong and powerful. You know, and it's sort of funny because although you broke this down in personal relationships, this is what we need also to become a strong people. The same exact thing, the tenderness, the understanding, the patience, the comfort, the harmony, the pleasure, the enjoyment, the faith, the stability, the comfort, the guidance, the uplifting. And I missed 5 and 6 for the man, but you're going to have to tell me in the last one the truth, because this is what we need. You know, and if we have these things and we're able to trust each other to go to another level together. But this was absolutely powerful. And again, thank you very much for bringing that out.
Not a problem. You're right. The 5 and 6 was fulfillment and pleasure and enjoyment. And I want to touch on something dealing with pleasure and enjoyment. A lot of times you find couples looking for pleasure, excitement, or fulfillment or enjoyment from other people. And that's the person that's going to continue to look for it in places where it's not authentic. You cannot turn pleasure and enjoyment into a real form of simple entertainment. You need to be able to sit with your spouse and laugh and enjoy the company. As Solomon put it, drink from your own fountain. A lot of times we're trying to find water in so many other different places. It's good to drink from your own fountain. Appreciate it. Enjoy it. That's what it's there for. You know, when it's hot, when something is you're feeling dehydrated, a nice cool drink feels great, doesn't it?
Right.
This is something that we have to find in our significant others. But you're right. It does carry over into society, but remember, it starts with family. Because when you learn this in your home, when you learn this as a youth, you carry it over into your family, and you carry it over into your daily life, because these are things that people should be with each other on a natural basis. You have to remember, there was a reason why Solomon said in the book of Proverbs, he said, "My children, hear the instruction of your father and forsake not the law of your mother." It's very true, because the society that we live in reveals how we were taught inside our homes. You have to remember, Yvonne. There's a such thing your biological mother and father. Say again.
Well, repeat what you just now said at the latter end. You said that. Repeat what you just now said about the home.
Society basically reflects what we are taught at home. When you look at how people interact with one another, when the breakdown of family starts to happen, you start to see it inside the society. For example, a child is not taught to hate a color. A child is not born hating a color, but they're taught that. That's what we call racism, hating somebody for a color or their specific race or their religion. That is not something a child is born doing. That is something that is taught to that child because they hear it in the home.
It's a learned behavior. That's correct.
Right. It's a learned behavior. So, therefore, when you look at programs like this one right here, we now become the new mother and father of the people, because mother and father also is the teacher. When you look at the commandment, it says you shall not hate mother or father.
Well,
you
that
shall
would
not
go,
dishonor,
you know,
mother or father.
Right, and if I were to take what you just said, if I were to take what you just now said in context, it would be the fact that that's what we all are to each other. We're all mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, and so forth to each other, and being one another's keeper, being one another's keeper,
exactly.
You know, and being able to look out. And this is how come it's so important that we do teach, and that we do here, and that we keep ourselves in a position where people can listen to what we're saying, because the words that you're putting out, somebody's going to take them in. You know, as I said when we first opened up the show on tonight, that it's important that we're teaching people and putting them in a position to be able to listen, because you never want to turn people off where they can't hear what you have to say, you know, because then it's pointless, it's useless. So you want people to be able to hear what you have to say, and this is how come we have to come before people with a certain comeliness, with a certain humility, so that they can hear you, you know, and they can understand. You know, getting to the people and getting to a place of being able to bring people together. And I clearly understand what you're saying and where you're going, because I think it is important that we understand how to treat each other on a personal note, how to treat each other in our personal lives, and how that is significant and important, because that floods over to how we treat everybody else in society and how we treat our brothers and our sisters. You know, but I really do like what you said, because I never thought about it or considered it in that way, that we are each other's mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, and aunts and uncles or whatever. But we stand as an example of the people who are teaching. So it's important that we make sure that what we're saying is being able to penetrate the people who are listening. And so they'll be able to not just listen, but to be able to hear, and not just hear, but be able to listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean,
so
go ahead. I'm sorry.
So what I need you to do, because this is very good, and what I need you to do is to tell the people how what you just now gave to us, the seven things that a man should use his woman for and the seven things that a woman should use her man for, I'd like for you to be able to sort of tie it in with how this bridges a gap, because this definitely bridges a gap between a man and a woman. This is very important because it definitely, you know, because it seems like this is a thing that this society has been trying to rip apart, that relationship that man and woman is supposed to have, how the Most High has set it up, has been completely chiseled. You know, people, it's just being chiseled away by this society with so many things that come in to do the separation, whether it's because now the woman is making more money than the man, and you have women talking about they don't need nobody but the JC, and then you have the homosexuality, and it's being so openly exploited and sensationalized at that. So there's so many things that are going on right now in this society that breaks down and tears down this whole system that you just now gave to us, which is vitally important, but there's so much that's going on right now in society that breaks this down, tears it apart, and causes people to turn away from. And it seems like it's just designed to destroy this structure that you just now spoke on, the structure of family, the structure of unity, the structure of how a man and a woman is supposed to relate to one another.
I had to laugh because that was very beautifully put. And there were so many things going through my mind right now when you were speaking. I was like, well, where do I start first? But I'll try to keep it simple.
Uh-huh.
If you look at, and I want to start from the back, from the end of your statement and go backwards. If you look at how war, for example, between different countries, between different nations, one people desire to annihilate another. When you look at that, the easiest way to do it was to break up the family structure. If you remove
right.
the men and you got the women and the children left and you take them into a form of captivity, whether it be physically or mentally or both, you now are facilitating hate in those people. And that is something that's going to fester. It is going to be like a disease or a mildew inside a house. And it is going to be within the walls of that individual for a very long time. It's ingrained in them. Now, to touch up on how do we tie this these seven articles, these seven forms of affection that a man should have for a woman, a woman should have for a man into society, all these are based on love. If you know how to love the woman or the man next to you, you learn how to do the same to other people, because as it says in the Quran, want for your brother what you want for yourself.
Correct.
Right. The Messiah says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. So if you enjoy these things, these comforts for yourself, why wouldn't you want to see the next individual experience the same thing? This is where we tend to fall short. We don't think about the next individual. When somebody says, oh, this Christian woman, this Christian man, suddenly your appeal to humanity goes away. Or somebody says this Muslim man or this Jew or this white guy or whatever, suddenly you forget that they're human and your appeal for humanity goes away. But this is the reality. If you take religion and you look at all these different books, show me one that does not talk about love and peace.
Right.
They all say the same
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. 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 And the sad
is that
part about
deny?
It is. Exactly. And the sad part about, I'm sorry, and the sad part about it is that even though all of these books talk about love and peace and unity and all of this, people are still using these things to create chaos and to create reasons to hate and to create wars. You have literal wars going on in the Middle East based upon what people's way of life or what they believe systems are, and to them this is perfectly fine. You know, today my East shared something with me today. Somebody sent him a video, and he told me to watch the video. And it was sickening to me how this guy was on the video. He had his face covered up in black, but you could see his eyes. And he began to say how he purposely infected these women with the HIV virus.
Mm.
And then he called off their names and their ages. And then he said as if he had a right to do it because they should have been more careful. And as if he was doing society a favor by teaching these women a lesson. And then even said that he know that when he stopped messing with them, they probably went to the next man. So he feels like he is spreading this virus, this one man, to all of these people. The youngest person that he talked about was a 15-year-old virgin. And it not just frightens me and makes me sick to my stomach, but it's sorrowful. And this is a black guy. And he specifically said he's given this virus to blacks and Latinos. If that's not self-hatred, I don't know what is. But these are the kind of people that are living in this society with us. These are the kind of people that are walking around with these beast hearts, with this hatred in them. And this is what we're living with. Although, as you said, we have all of these books that tells us about love, tells us about peace, tells us about the Most High in some way, in some form, but yet for some reason or another, all it seems like people are able to focus on is the negativity, the things that cause us to hate, to hurt, to cause harm, to destroy, be destructive. And it's sad. I will probably never forget that video because this man called off their first and last names one by one and posted this and then mentioned their ages. And it's just heart-wrenching to me. It's just so sad that this is the society and this is a black guy. So we could scream and yell to the top of our lungs about how this country has treated us. We could scream and yell to the top of our lungs about the Caucasians. But I'd like to scream and yell about what we're doing to each other. When will we get to a point that we learn how to love each other, respect one another, really follow the words of the Most High? When will we get there? And it's just really sad that this is the society that we live in, that this is where we at. I know that causes for a quiet moment because that's something that's really terrifying to think about. However, that's hard to recuperate from, I know. You know, for all of the listeners out there, there's so much for us to teach each other. You know, so much for us to teach our children and the people that we're around about being safe. And it's sad that we don't just have to look out for other people, but we have to look out for each other. And on that note, let me just say to everybody, and I know that we need a second because that was something that was really hard and heavy. But anybody who has a question or would like to make a comment, just press *1 and raise your hand, and you'll be able to come in on the call. And on that point, Samoya, are you ready for questions?
I am. I would like to point out something really quickly. You know, I was sitting there thinking while you were speaking about this individual, and the scripture that popped in my mind was that there was going to come a time where the hearts of the people would grow cold.
Cold.
And cold is symbolic of unemotional.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally goes back to, and it's funny we're on this topic dealing with family, because when you look at the book of Genesis, it tells you right there that there was a breakdown in the family based on disobedience, because the disobedience has stemmed from the parents to the two sons that had a conflict, and one killed the other. And that violence has not dissipated as of yet.
That's right. That's true. And, you know, when I was watching this video, there was a scripture that came to mind. It says they will kill you and say that they're doing the Most High a favor. Because this is what he sounded like he felt like he was doing. He's teaching lessons. He's teaching lessons. Well, this is Knowledge of Power Radio, and I want to thank everybody for joining us on tonight. And this, of course, is your girl Yvonne, the Peachy Apple, and we're ready for some questions and answers on tonight. And comments or statements if you'd like to make them. And again, you just press *1. And it raises your hand, and I'll be able to call you in. So on that note, Shamoya, we have somebody that wants to ask you a question or even make a comment. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Hello, caller. How are you?
Yes, hello. I'm doing well. Thank you.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I wanted to call in and discuss a little bit about this discussion.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to address a couple of things that I overheard, which was not a lot because I kind of called in late. But
before you do, could you please tell us your name and where you're from, and please?
Yes, I'm known as Mustafa Sharif. I'm from New York, and I'm in New York now. But I'm coming from the motherland now because that's where I'm based at. But I'm born and raised in the United States, and. I think that I have a little bit of insight from the outside perspective as well as the inside perspective on some of the issues that we were talking about with the relationship and the self-hatred. I'm not sure if you guys had a chance to see that film, 13th, which is on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a very important film for a lot of people to see. And, you know, we've been talking about it since the 80s. Steve Coakley and the Phil Valentines and all the other soldiers, you know, there are a lot of soldiers, but I mean, me, that's why I was coming up around those guys. And, we, you know, the always been about the struggle and the revolution and getting together and standing together. But even from the time when I was 14 years old, going to those meetings up in Harlem, which is not for us anymore. I always was saying to myself, well, what's stopping us from getting together? The movie 13th explains a lot of that. So what I'm ready to say is that maybe about 95% of all the African Americans in the United States are suffering from post-traumatic stress. Some people say post-traumatic slavery, post-traumatic Jim Crow, post-traumatic millennia. But let's just be honest. We have a society, particularly in our community, where the people haven't had a chance to actually be what I would consider people. I was having a conversation with a lady today who's born and raised in Russia, but she's a Korean. Her family descended from Korea, and she was explaining to me how she sees Black Americans acting a certain way and being a certain way and just can't understand how they have so much opportunity here in America. She came in with no papers, and in 10 years, she owns her own house, and she's doing so wonderful in the country. And I explained to her how that this country has a base of a foundation of destroying the Black family. And what I've noticed is that just like drugs, just like HIV, everything they've put into our society as a people to destroy us has flown over into the society. Today I was on the train. I noticed an old man, maybe in his 60s, and another man maybe in his 60s as well, getting on the train and told the guy, excuse me. He couldn't accept the excuse me. He was like, I'm not moving for you. Go around. And before you know it, he was cussing this other man out. And I'm talking about these were elders, what I would consider elders, especially back in Africa. Those are the guys you go to when you have confrontation. And I said to myself, and I said it out loud without knowing, that this country is probably one of the worst countries I've ever been to in my life. And it's not because you can't get medical care, you can't get welfare, you don't have electricity, you're suffering from Ebola or malaria. No, because the social fiber in this country has been degraded so much that people can't even socialize. I go around all the time, I see my sisters, because we're talking about relationships. I say out the day, if I talk to 10 sisters that I know nothing about them, if I talk to them, 10 of them, 8 of them is going to cuss me out. And I'm not talking about being rude. I mean just being cordial and nice. There's no love, and the love, I don't see how there's a solution when there is no revamping. My position is this, that no matter what Band-Aid we put on this situation, if our people cannot be taken out of this situation and reprogrammed, there's basically nothing we can do. And not only that, the virus is passing through the society. In the United States right now, it's probably the most unsafe country you can live in an urban city environment in the world. And I'm talking about South Africa and Nigeria and Egypt and all of these other countries that people are talking about as dangerous. You'd be more likely walking down the street in New York to be attacked or put in a situation where you're aggressed more than those third world countries. That's a society problem. It's not an issue of, you know, black people or anything, because unfortunately, that black young man that you were talking about, and he's talking about he's going to give it to Puerto Rican women or Latino women and black women, he's hating himself. You know why he's hating himself? Because he's been taught that the only person to hate is the good old black man. The Latino part, I'm not going to get into that. But that's what he's been taught. So the women are being taught to hate the black people. Everybody's being taught to disrespect and downgrade and go against the black people. But what's happening now in American society is that it's falling over into everybody. Everybody got the HIV. Everybody walking around with doing drugs. Everybody's walking around hating themselves. You can have a neighbor next door. Nobody can even have a conversation with you. What I want to find out is how can someone live in a society that's not a society? It's not a society. And that's the question I'm going to ask you, gentlemen. I'm going to ask you, how can you live in a society that doesn't have a society in relation to the United States? And thank you very much.
Wow.
I appreciate that question. And I appreciate what you had to express as far as your views, because you're right. You're very right. And that last part where you said how it spilled over into every society, that's true. You know, the United States is supposed to be the melting pot of the world. There's a reason why it's regarded as Babylon. Babylon, or Babel, was known as the gods, but it's also known as confusion. And the problem with this country in and of itself is that it's like to a bunch of kids from different backgrounds going to the same school, and they have different views on how things should be done. And you put them all in one place and try to teach them the same curriculum. That's called social reform. We call it brainwashing. Things have to happen with people. Whether they be black people, whether they be white, Hispanic, Asian, the thing that has to happen with the people right now is that you do have people out there like you and like myself that are still reaching for good, that are still reaching for righteousness. And in order to become a society, people like us are now going to have to band together and stop putting our hand to deal with social ills that we allow to affect our lives. You cannot change everybody. You cannot fix a whole state. You can become what they identify as a new community, a new nation. Because you do have people out there that want to do the right thing, doesn't matter what color they are. They want to live in peace. And this is something that has to happen. The problem is that we continue to try to reform a system that is already broken down, as you said. How do you put a band-aid on a proverbial bully wound? You can't.
Right.
You have to start fresh.
Right. I'm sorry, Shamoya, but, you know, that's correct. When you think about it, it's sort of hard to know exactly where to start from, but we start from ourselves. We start from us, and we start from, because something that he said that's so true, and I know I said it also, is that when you see something like this, it's self-hatred. When we look around us, there are so many things that we're doing to prove that it's a lot of self-hatred between us. You know, we haven't learned how to love ourselves, therefore it's difficult to love somebody else. It's really hard. And that's where it starts from. It starts from self, recognizing who we are, recognizing what we are, and being able to move from that particular point, loving our household first, then loving those abroad. But it definitely starts from self. So if you're ready, Shamoya, then we have another caller.
I'm ready.
Hello, caller. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Would you please tell us who you are and where you're from?
Yeah, my name is Konani. I'm speaking up out of California.
How are you, Konani?
I'm doing okay, sis. I'm showing you guys the show. How you doing? I wanted to say something because the brother that just called, Mustafa, made a very valuable point. And before I raise this question, I'd like to say this just to add to it. Now, you know how, like, in the 1960s, the place that they used to call the more political hub was often the prison system. The prison system was always seen as the place of enlightenment. And even back then, people in societies like neighborhoods, eventually when them children grew up because they didn't have any form of guidance from the streets, as in the ghetto, because they had to make a buck, so they was inside the dope game or however they was committing burglaries like Malcolm X or however it was that they were doing in order to generate a dollar. Eventually, each of these individuals ended up in prison. And one thing that a lot of the older men in prison had instilled, because sometimes when men deal with men, and I mean strong men, strong men knows how to break down a young man that's trying to be somebody and he's not. And then in prison at that time, a lot of the older OGs and a lot of the wiser men, they may sometimes put their hands on a young man in order to get that young man in shape and then make him read a book. So when he did go back out there in society, he has something to contribute. But when you take away the real men and the solid men of thought, the solid men of education, then you allow a society to where now prisons has become so broken to where when a person comes in, they come in one way and they go out even worse. So it's like they're never learning nothing. There is no place of real discipline. So when you look at society now, and as the brother was sitting there expressing all the things that's going on out there in society, there's a sense of no accountability. You have no fathers that's willing to be fathers. A lot of the fathers that's in prison, and while they're in prison, they're still playing the same game because there is no place for them to sit down and to really think and learn. There isn't no, we don't have, you have little certain positions out there in society where they still have the Booker T. Washington syndrome, where everybody's thinking about trying to generate a buck and making money and making moves and putting things in play. But even then, you can take the people out of a society, but if you take them out of a society, you still have to have the necessary players set up, men of knowledge, in order to teach the incoming individuals so that they can learn how to properly conduct themselves. Question is even though right now it seems like we're in a time where things is being experienced backwards, we're not learning in a forward fashion. We're learning backwards. So it's like we having to experience everything in a worse and from a worse situation. Then the fruit of those that's coming up out of it is able to see it. So the question is now is how do we as a people know when that timing is there? And how do we find and reach those other strong men to put them in place so that this movement can better correct people and give them the knowledge to learn how to be men and women.
That's a deep question. Yes.
I will I'll say it in this fashion. There's no greater thing that you can present before men than a challenge. I'm going to simplify it in just that manner. The thing that will make a man step up is if he feels as though he's being challenged or he's being outdone. And I know that sounds a little unorthodox, but if you consider how a challenge, as you just pointed out, when the youngsters come across real men, they have no other alternative but to shape up or ship out. In other words, get out the way. Society right now is so intermingled with everybody trying to adopt everybody else's culture now. Nobody knows exactly who he is because, as you said, the fathers are gone. There's no stability really being taught to these children. And you're right. People are going in reverse. That's the whole concept and the definition of what religion means. It means to link back. And if you notice in society, you have a lot of people linking themselves back to cultures and lifestyles that were destroyed, and for a reason. So right now in this day and time, and I want to add this to what the other brother was saying, because he brought up something very beautiful about the documentary 13th. There was a brother on there that said, right now, our community has no real defenders. And it's true. As you spoke about the Malcolm X's, the Marcus Garvey's, the Martin Luther King's, the men of those days, they were at least trying to defend our community from drugs, prostitution, gangs, and so on and so forth. They were trying to enlighten the people. But every time you had someone stand up who tried to enlighten the people, as it says inside the book of the ISIS paper, they were knocked down one way or another.
Right.
And we just discussed this a few minutes ago. If you knock down the males, what do you have left? The women have to fend for themselves. They have to be the mother and the father in the relationship. So at this point in time, there is going to be a need, because given the fact that the brother touched upon men, strong men who are in prison, this is the same thing that was going on back when they would go to war and you would incarcerate or enslave the men and you would break them. I'm pretty sure many of us know about the Willie Lynch story and how you broke a black man. You put him in front of all the other slaves. You take the biggest and the strongest and you pour tar on him. You feather him.
Yeah, always was fair.
Yeah, feminine.
Right. Always
was fair. You tie his...
No, I was saying they always use fear.
Absolutely.
To intimidate and make people afraid. They always use fear. I think that there's a delay, but they always use fear. You know, even with what
Absolutely.
You just now said, even what you just now said about the Willie Lynch and demasculating the man, even today's society, when you talked about people like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and so forth, fear. Fear stop people from wanting to step up and become these great leaders. Fear stop people from being able to speak out the way that we need them to speak out and become community leaders and become leaders of their communities and of their people, because they're afraid, well, if I do that, they're going to do the same thing to me they did to Martin Luther King. They're going to do the same thing they did to Malcolm X. So the fear, and this is how they wind up getting so many thousands and hundreds of thousands of slaves to be slaves. Fear.
Absolutely. But as the brother was pointing out, the men are going to have to stand up and stop being so fearful. Because here's the thing. You either can die today or you can be weak and live till you're about 80, 90 years old, if you get to that age, Lynn. But you've already died plenty times over by watching your people suffer. Over and over again, never saying anything, never doing anything. See, that's the point. There has to be not just strong men, but there's a key element to that. These men have to be wise and knowledgeable in their ways. They have to be judicious.
Right.
These men have to know how to take direction as well as lead by way of example.
Exactly.
Kids, people do not respect the person that directs their path and tells them things, but you haven't earned that. They don't believe in nothing you're saying. Like, for example, I've read many books by authors that speak some deep, profound things, but when you look at the conduct and the lifestyle of these authors, they're not hands-on. They're not in the trenches. They're not in the ghettos going telling these men, hey, let's go do this. They tell them what to do, but they won't go lead by way of example because of fear. This is something that needs to stop. Because as it comes out, the man that we were just speaking to, they're making great points.
Yes. You know, it's this topic has been absolutely dynamic, and you know that we always come to this particular point and we have to sort of kind of end this for now, but not completely over, because we want everybody to know that we're going to continue these conversations because they're very important. And we need to be able to continue to enlighten people, and your questions and your comments are so important because it takes everybody to another level of thinking. So never think that your questions or your comments will be unimportant or a waste of time, because they're very important. However, right now, we have to sort of kind of cut this particular segment, because I'd like for Mustafa to come on and speak to you about some of the things that I told you about earlier when the show first started, is that we're, you know, this is one of the ways also being able to get us together as a people. It's our financial structure, because we're emotional people that should be more spiritually led and spiritually inclined than we are emotional, but we haven't learned that yet. But in order for us to be able to be more sure of who we are, we have to be able to have the finances to do that. We have to be able to have the finances that makes us sure and that makes us confident, because that's one of the fears also. If they keep us living substandard and keep us living below a certain standard, then they keep us in fear, and you're more inclined to say yes, sir, to people that you shouldn't be saying yes, sir, to, and yes, ma'am, people that you shouldn't be saying yes, ma'am, to. But that's still a level of fear, that if I don't do what this country wants me to do, and I'm trying to refrain from saying other things, if I don't do what this country wants me to do, then I'm going to not be able to feed my children. I won't have a job. I won't have money. I won't have this. I won't have that. But if we find ourselves in a position where we can have our own finances, where we can have something that belongs to us, that they can't take from us, it helps to build on our own stability. It helps to build on our own power. It helps to build on our own consciousness of how great we really are. But we have to have something to hold on to. So having said that, this is Knowledge of Power Radio, and this is your girl, Yvonne the Peachy Apple. And right now, I'd like to introduce to you, first let me just say, Shamoya, thank you so much. Everybody who asked the question, made a statement, thank you. This was powerful. And right now, we're going to switch tracks a little bit, and we're going to have Mustafa to come on, because I'd like for him to take you to the next level. You know, everything that Shamoya said is so pertinent. We need that. So now let's tell you how you can have all of that if you have some financial structure. Mustafa, I was going to do the same thing that I did to you earlier and not put him on the phone and then have him talk, not put him on the line and then have him talk. But Mustafa, are you there? Mustafa, are you there? Good evening. How are you? Good evening. It's sort of funny because I was getting ready to ask you, are you there, and realized I didn't have your mic live. So, and I did that earlier, and it was sort of funny. But I'm glad that you're here, you know, and thank you so much for even joining in on that conversation, because you said some things that was really powerful. And I just want to say thank you to you so much. Really do appreciate you, you know. And, you know, we've been talking about financial structure and about how important it is. If we have the finances, then we have a stability that most people are lacking that, that helps them to be tied to a job and a 9-to-5 and somebody ordering them and telling them what to do all the time. But we know that if we had our own finances and if we were able to have our own schools, our own finances, our own land, these things help us to become powerful where people can't have so much control and power over us. But as I was telling the people earlier on the show when I first started, I was saying how, you know, there are things that you're doing in Senegal and wanting to build a school and in the process of that, and you have all the equipment, the gold mine, and so forth. And I pretty much mentioned to them the idea that we were talking about before about people coming over, some strong men who don't mind working and staying in Africa for a little while, that will not just help the villages and not just help well care, but it will help them personally with their own financial gain. So I'm going to turn this portion over to you, Mustafa, and let you take it where you want to take it, the way you want to take it. I want to say thank you before you even get started. And again, this is Knowledge of Power Radio, and this is Mustafa Sharif.
Assalamu alaikum to everybody, shalom, and peace and blessings to everybody else who are not speaking Hebrew and who are not speaking Arabic. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today, and we're going to just have a couple of words about some things, but I want to mention that nothing we're talking about is not related. Every single thing that we talk about here is related either at the foundation, first floor, second floor, third floor, but it's all related. Knowledge of power, it means that what? We need to know how to get power. We need to not find out how to get power. What is power? Power of what? Power of mind, power of stability, power of financial stability, power of health. All of this is what knowledge of power is about. Now I'm going to come in and I'm going to explain to you about how that all ties in. Basically, based on the conversation that you guys were having, I'm going to tie in what I'm talking about. One of the reasons why my own position, I felt that it was important to go to Africa, was not because I was afraid. I was not afraid. I've never been afraid. I've been ready since I was a little boy to sacrifice and lay my life down for the struggle. But what I realized was that sacrificing your life for the struggle doesn't and didn't necessarily mean that you were going to be successful. So what does that mean? I believe, and it's funny because I have never listened to Malcolm X outside of Malcolm X film, the book, and what people tell me. I've never listened to Malcolm X. And a couple of weeks ago was the anniversary of Malcolm X's assassination, if I'm not mistaken. That's what they were discussing, and I listened to Malcolm X, and we're talking about a very articulate, a very respectable, a very intuitive leader that mm-hmm. wasn't taken out when he was fussing and fighting. That was taken out because his method was effective. And what I realized at a certain age was, look, I'm going to live and sacrifice my life just like they did. Matter of fact, my business card, time I moved to Africa till now, for our organization, WellCare Community Development Organization, has the picture of Martin Luther King. Although I probably have a little different views on the way that he, you know, handled certain things with peace, I probably would have been more like a warrior and fighting and probably been taken out quick like, you know, the Panthers would have, because I would have probably been down with them back in those days. But I say that because I realized that, guess what, there were no leaders around who were ready to take that move. I grew up with the Al Sharptons. I grew up with the Cornel West.
Jesse
I grew
Jackson.
Up with the – well, I won't even say Jesse Jackson because I've never seen Jesse Jackson one. I'm talking about people who I was able to see. I was in meetings with. They were in Harlem. They were in Brooklyn. They were around in meetings. And a lot of the Bill Valentines, the Stephen Coakleys, I'm talking about who I actually personally had a chance to listen to. And what I realized is that they only went to a certain level. They were not willing or able to go to the next level, which was stand out and be really recognized. And one of the reasons was obviously because of the media, and two, also because power is corruptive. And basically, mm-hmm. it becomes a point And that's what happened after they took away the big leaders. Because they didn't just do it in America. They did it in Africa, brother. They did it in Africa. They took out Nkrumah. They took out Lumumba. They took out every single person that they felt threat. Sankofa. They took out everybody. And they put in their own people. Just like they took out the good people here in the United States at that time, they did the same thing in the motherland. So what I said to myself was that, look, I'm going to sacrifice my life, but I'm not going to sacrifice my life and at the end still be struggling 40 years from now. That was my goal. Of course, I know that Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and all of the other leaders, Patrice Lumumba, all of them, they were not thinking that. But based on my education, I thank God for my mother who made sure I stayed in school with the Caucasians, who made sure I had a good education, and I was able to understand the system. When you move, and when you're ready, you cannot move on their terms. When you move and when you're ready, you cannot do it in their environment. Perfect example. I looked at what they called the Israelis, the ones who were there in Israel now, occupying the place. I looked at what they went through. All through the 20th century, from the beginning of 1900, even before that, they were persecuted in Europe. They were nothing. The same Europeans who came here to America, they treated them like crap. But what happened at the end of World War II? They did what? They said, look, if we don't get control of this situation, we're going to be always attacked, always abused. So what did they do? They went ahead and said, starting, we have to get financially secure. There have to be organization. And with this financial security and with organization, that's how you're going to get what we need. And they said, we need wealth. Because a lot of people are searching for money. A lot of people want to be rich. But guess what? Being rich does not make you wealthy. The way that these Israelis are doing it is how you get wealthy. And the base of wealth starts with financing and organizing. And then they move to wellness. I mean, you come around, they got police cars, they rolling up, they do what they want to do, they got all the connections, they do what they want to do in the society. Nobody's stopping them. Why? Because they have finance, they have organization, and right now, because this world works on wealth, that's what they have. So I said to myself, what can I do? I was a 24-year-old vice president at a bank. I had 6 banking licenses, and I turned around and looked at myself, and I said, you know what? No matter what I get and how much resource I have, I can never take my people to the next level. In the United States. And that's what I said to myself. So I decided 14 years ago to move to Africa. And for the last 14 years, I've been studying how we can gain finance, how we can gain organization, and how we can gain wealth. I went there to try to organize and try to build something for our brothers and sisters here in the diaspora to come, and also the brothers and sisters in Africa to utilize so that we have a platform to become wealthy as a people. But you know what? I found out something new. I found out something else. I actually found the key to our social problems. Yes, I had the same post-traumatic slavery syndrome, post-traumatic stress syndrome everybody else had in the States. But you know what happened? Living in Africa, living in an environment, like the gentleman just said, with elders, with strong men, with people who have a certain way of thinking, a certain way of doing things, I've changed somewhat. To wherein now, I've recognized within myself that in reality, it's like I don't even fit in the United States no more. I mean, I'm just looking at people the way they interact with each other, and I'm like, I mean, my spirit just goes down because I don't understand it. Why is there so much animosity? Why is there so much confusion? Why is there so much issues going on? And you know what I'm going to tell you? That can never be resolved in our community here. And that's what the brother was talking about after slavery. He was like, look, let's go back. Let's go back. We got to go back. We got to go back to Africa. Why? If you don't go back, you wouldn't. For me, my opinion is that you cannot start in a place where you have no foundation. So my point was like, look, go to Africa, and being in Africa, now I learn my culture. I learned that my aunt is actually my mother because she's the sister of my mother and has the same blood as my mother. So me being her child is the same as me being her child because they are the same in DNA. They are the same in family. I realized that my father, his older brother, and his younger brother were my fathers because guess what? They got the same blood as I do. And their kids are not my cousins, but my brothers and my sisters. And that we can eat together and that we can be together and that every issue in the family, whether it be domestic issue between husband and wife, brother and brother confrontation, auntie and uncle confrontation, parent and son confrontation, all of the issues, the family, they have the elders who sit down and resolve those issues as a family. They have the elders who have the utmost respect where when they say the word, that's the last word because that's their position in the family. When it's time to marry your daughter, if you're a younger brother, you're going to have to give the respect to your older brother to be the one to marry your daughter off, not you, because your older brother gave the younger brother the respect because he's the one who marries the daughter off as well. And I'm not talking about marry her off without her permission. I'm talking about, yes, they agree. It's not like they're trying to tell you. It's not the Middle East. We have a social situation in Africa, which is wonderful. And a lot of people say, oh, Africa, we always see on TV this and that. Stop looking on the TV. The president is the first one to say it, and I'm going to be the second one to say it. Fake news. Fake news. They showing you the worst of the worst. But guess what? I can show you the worst of the worst in the United States or the worst of the worst in Europe, and you will know that what's the worst of the worst here, it ain't even touching what's the worst of the worst over there. Yes, we got problems. There's problems in Africa. Yes, there are problems here. But I promise you, the solution to both problems is within us. And you know how the Creator worked that out? He said, that which is first will be last, and last will be first. And you know what that means? We were taken out of Africa. We were sold. We were robbed. We were kidnapped. We left Africa. But guess what? We have never had a home here. And I'm really sad that people seem to feel because one or two or three Michael Jordans or five or six Pete Diddy's or eight or nine healthcare workers are going through that's a representation of who we are. Most of our young brothers is in jail with criminal records, can't even vote. So I'm sorry. Yes, everybody has an opportunity, but there's a disadvantage on our end. And what I'm telling you is that part of the self change, the self-identification, the self-issues rely in going back to the motherland. I promise you, anybody who's ever been to the motherland, they can tell you the same exact thing I'm telling you. There is a way that the motherland changes you and makes you a better person. Now, I'm not saying everything is perfect, but I bet you one thing, what we got over there is for us. Nobody's going to take that away. But what you got over here, there ain't no guarantee when you got it today, your grandkids going to have it tomorrow. Let me just let you know. Now, let's get back to what I'm supposed to be talking about, which is wealth building. Over the last 14 years, I've been in West Africa studying what? I've been studying research. I've been studying mining. I've been studying agriculture. I've been studying manufacturing, industry. And what I did is I basically went in every industry in every country in West Africa to search for what is going to be a way that we can build wealth in our community. And we got into diamond mining in Sierra Leone, gold mining into Guinea, and seafood export from Senegal, education, obviously, at the base, farming, industrial manufacturing, things that really make a difference in Africa. That's why I haven't turned back, because I know that who I am, I make an impact in Africa. But at the same time, I came back to share the word with my brothers and sisters to tell you that, yes, there is definitely an opportunity in Africa. And if we cannot understand that the key to our development is going back to Africa, then we have really been messed up in this situation because, unfortunately, the United States of America is going down. And if you want to go down with it, okay. But you know what I believe? I believe the Creator put a spirit in us for a reason. We are the original man in this world. And if we're not in tune with nature, and if we're not in tune with the universe, then nothing is going to be in tune in this earth. So the original man, the human, has to go back and has to revamp himself and has to recreate himself. And I believe the platform is in Africa. you can buy, you, for example, I'm going to give you an example about agriculture, because we're going to talk about agriculture first. Right now in Senegal, we have about 450 acres of land. 450 acres of land in Tambacounda. It's called Tambacounda. It's a place that's fertile, very fertile land, but it's known for bananas, planting, and it's very good. That land is very good for bananas and planting. Right now, with this 450 acres, what we are trying to do, we're closing off the land, and what we want to do is we want to say to our brothers and sisters in America, there's an opportunity to invest in a particular place. It belongs to you. I have a lot of land there, and that you own. It belongs to you. You have a deed to it. And now you know what you have to do? You only have to plant it one time because they keep growing. When the banana grow, he make three. And when he go, another one come up from behind. If you make a passion fruit orchard, you plant them, it's finished. A mango tree orchard, you plant them, it's finished. You just produce. And reason why I'm mentioning this aspect of agriculture is because a lot of the brothers and sisters in America are not ready to move to Africa. But they're kind of looking at it. They want to see how it's going to move. They want to know if it's something productive for them. But I'm telling you, Senegambia in particular, flights every single day from New York to Senegal. The flight is not that long, but guess what? You can go there for a couple of weeks. You can get your plants, plant them on your land, get your paperwork, head back to America, and you just wait for your fruit to start bearing fruits for you. And at the same time, you could easily be a part of our cooperative and have people selling those fruits for you. And every month or every week that those fruits are being sold for you, your money is being deposited in your account. How does that happen? Because I facilitate that with my company. And why do I do that? I do that because I want to facilitate the relationship between Africa and America. I'm born and raised here, have a company here, have a company in Africa. And in order to facilitate the transferring of these types of resources, it has to be a company in place. And that's what we stand for. We stand for bridging that gap. I'll give you another example. We're doing a gold mining project in Guinea, Conakry. Right now, our company, Giza Development Group, which is the name of our company in Guinea, is a company that is licensed to buy and export gold. So what we do is we put in the facilities. If one of you guys or you know somebody who wants to invest in gold, come down. I'm not asking you to invest anything. I'm inviting you. Come over, secure a situation. We go over, you see the facilities. You see what's available. That's all. If you could spend a couple of days going to Vegas or going to the casino or going here and there, going to this, that, and the third, you could spend 3 or 4 days to secure wealth for your future, not only for you, but for your children. And if you go into Guinea, for example, I just want to give you an example. A kilo of gold is about $40,000. Let's just use that average. When you go into Guinea, do you know how much they are selling a kilo of gold for? $26,000. That means that in the bush, you can buy gold and almost make double just going out the bush. Now, you're probably going to say, well, why are the Africans not doing it? You know why? Because they're disenfranchised. Something like us here. They don't give them visas. They take their money for visa applications, and they give one out of every 10,000 applicants a visa. And usually people who have visas have money. Their family is in government. They have a connection. But the people who really need the resource, who really need to be able to take their resources and go sell them overseas, they can't. So you got the Indians coming in. You got the Chinese coming in. You got the Europeans coming into the bush, in the bushes of Africa. I've seen them going to buy this gold, going to buy these resources and taking them out. Why are we sitting back? We shouldn't be sitting back. Our land is there. All the resources is there. And we got American passports. We can go anywhere in the world and sell our products. We need to be flooding Africa. Let's just talk about Sierra Leone. The best and richest diamonds in the world come out of Sierra Leone. The highest gem quality diamonds come out of Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone has diamond. Sierra Leone has gold. Sierra Leone has platinum. Sierra Leone has so many resources, but it's one of the poorest countries in the world. Why is that? Why did they just come from a civil war almost 7 years ago, 12 years ago? Why did they just finish a civil war? Why did Ebola just come out? Because they're doing the same stuff they was doing here with Tuskegee Airmen, with dividing the resources. It's the same thing going on in Africa every single day. But you know what? We here in America, we are wise to the situation. We know what's going on. That's why we need to go back there. Because you know what's going to happen when you go there, brothers and sisters? They're going to tell you, this is your land. We need you here. Take what you want. We'll work with you. We've been waiting for you. We didn't see you come till now, but now this is yours. Take it from me, brothers and sisters. At my age, I'm 40 years old, but I got diamond mines in Sierra Leone. I got gold mines in Guinea. I got land all over West Africa. I'm wealthy already, and I've only been in Africa 14 years. Some of us brothers and sisters been living here in the United States all their daggone life. They don't even own a piece of property. What I'm telling you is this. There are opportunities. Wellcare Community Development Organization has set up a system where we're inviting you guys over to Africa. You do not have to worry about anything or security or taking injections and all of this stuff they try to tell you to scare you away from Africa. Because guess what? They're jumping and flipping and flopping over there every single day. Just go to JFK, and you can see on Delta Airlines terminal when they say Dakar, you just go to see how 80% of the flight is Caucasians. The other 20% is Senegalese. So you guys have to stop. You guys have to stop playing into the game. They ripping and bleeding in Africa, and you sitting over here stressing about a job? And you a black man, you go to Africa, they're going to tell you, well, look, take the mine. You want to work it? Call your buddies over. And it's yours. Nobody's going to take it away from you.
I'm going to interject now.
I'm sorry.
I have to interject. I'm sorry. You're very excited, and what you're saying is powerful, and I'm hoping that everybody is hearing you like I'm hearing you because I'm excited about it. And I'm going to have to put you off until our next show. So I'm going to ask everybody that's on the show tonight. So Shamoy, are you there? Mustafa,
I'm here, and
it is powerful, and I know that people are hearing you because I was mesmerized, and I already know what you're talking about, you know. And again, I just want everybody to pay attention, you know. Please come back and be with Knowledge of Power on Sunday night. We're going to continue this conversation with both of these brothers. You know, there's a lot to learn, and all of these things are tied in together, as Mustafa has said. It's all tied in together because when one part of us is happy, we can make the rest of us happy. You know. If you have a splinter in your toe, your whole body is miserable until you get that splinter out. And then all of a sudden, because that toe feels better, the whole body feels better. And that's an analogy that we need to think about and consider. You know, we're running out of time, but this has been a magnificent show. This has been wonderful. At least to me, it has been a wonderful show. I hope that everybody's enjoyed this show as much as I have. This is a wonderful way to kick us back off. I mean, Knowledge of Power is back, and I just want to say thank you again to both of my guests. Mustafa Sharif and Shamoya Ben Issachar. We want to say thank you very much. I mean, you both have been powerful.
Thank you for every question,
every comment that was made, every single listener we had, the board lit up. I mean, there was a lot of people on the line tonight, and I want to say thank you to everybody. So on that note, please meet us on Sunday night, again at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here. Knowledge of Power Radio, and this is your girl Yvonne the Peachy Apple, and I want to say thank you to everybody again. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening, and come again real soon.
Kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get it back to the kids through the hell care. One less hungry mouth.